Welcome to the ACG Women in Gastroenterology podcast, where we spotlight the issues that matter most to women in GI, from fellowship through every stage of a thriving career. From conversations about maternal leave and contract negotiations to navigating post-graduation career paths and optimizing your practice, each episode offers practical insights designed to leave you informed, empowered, and confident in your journey forward. My name is Hannah Fisk Goodrich, and I'm a GI fellow at Yale. I serve on the ACG Women in GI committee, and I will be moderating this session today. Today, as part of our mini-series on post-training fellowships, we will be discussing the IBD fellowship. I would like to introduce our guest for today's podcast, Dr. Lisa Malter. For those of you who don't know her, Dr. Malter is a professor of medicine at the NYU School of Medicine, the director of education for the NYU IBD Center, and the director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Clinic at the Bellevue Hospital Center in New York City. Board-certified in gastroenterology, Dr. Malter's patient practice is focused primarily on inflammatory bowel disease, and she has pioneered access to care for the underserved patient population at Bellevue. Dr. Malter's academic interests include the study of inflammatory bowel disease, patient safety, and fellowship education. Dr. Malter teaches at the NYU Grossman School of Medicine and has published in Inflammatory Bowel Diseases, the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and CC360. She is a member of ACG, AGA, and the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. She serves as the editor of the ACG Universe, is a member of the ACG Training Committee, the ACG Education Task Force, and is a faculty advisor for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation's Greater New York Fellows Education Committee. She created and directs IBD 101, a first-year fellows course on IBD, in collaboration with NYU and the ACG. Dr. Malter received her medical degree from Rosalind Franklin University, Chicago Medical School, completed her internal medicine internship and residency at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, and went on to complete a gastroenterology fellowship at NYU Langone Medical Center. Dr. Malter, thank you so much for being here today to answer some of our questions. I'm thrilled to have you join us.
Thank you for having me.
To start off, how do you counsel fellows who are trying to decide whether to pursue the extra year for IBD fellowship?
So that's a great question, and one that comes to me from both my own fellows at NYU as well as other fellows that I've met through a number of other programs that I'm involved in. And I think that it's important to think about where you came from and where you want to go. When you are making this decision. I say that because the access to education and IBD during a general fellowship can be very variable. And for some fellows, it can get plenty, especially with intentionality or a schedule that allows for a lot of time dedicated to one area of focus. They can get enough within their own training program where they don't actually need that additional year of training. In contrast, the majority of fellows really aren't getting enough because most fellows aren't training at a center that has an IBD dedicated team. And those fellows, if they really want to pursue IBD, are going to be the ones that we do recommend doing a fellowship. I also will say that I personally have shifted over the past couple of years as our treatment armamentarium has grown so much. The need to do a fellowship has really kind of increased. And I think we see that there are more programs. When I was a trainee, there were, I think, 9 total IBD fellowships across the country. And I think there are somewhere on the order of about 35 now due to increasing demand that matches the fact that the disease treatment complexity has gone up.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. What advice do you have for applicants when trying to find the right program for them? And along those lines, what are some important differences between programs that applicants should be aware of when considering their options?
But I think it's not necessarily common for people to remember or recall that IBD fellowships are not ACGME accredited. I think most people have kind of just gone from like one program to the next and never really considered this. But I think it's important because when a program is ACGME accredited, like most people's gastroenterology fellowships will be, they're used to kind of just a standard set of educational norms that come with all programs. And that is not the case with an IBD fellowship. So since there's no organizing governing body, there's a lot of latitude for what's offered in the programs. And so I think it's important for people to think about, again, here, where they're coming from, why they want the training, and what they want to do on the other side. For people who really want to be focusing on a research career, whether it's basic translational or clinical research, they want to make sure that they're going to a training program that is going to provide them significant opportunity, both in terms of time and mentorship to accomplish their research goals. There are a subset of fellows, though, that are really coming to an IBD fellowship just to learn clinical IBD because they've had minimal to no IBD in their 3 years of GI training. And for those fellows, it's going to be less important to go somewhere that has a research focus, make sure that the place has enough clinical exposure. I will say that when I put our own program together at NYU Grossman School of Medicine back in 2018, that's when I sort of started laying the framework for it. I spoke to a lot of people at a lot of different institutions and took what I heard from others and thought about our own institution and the way we care for IBD at NYU to put our program together with a lot of intentionality. There were things that I heard like some programs have no inpatient exposure. Some programs have no outpatient exposure. Some programs have no endoscopy guaranteed, which sounds kind of crazy, but depending on what you're doing, there may not be time for endoscopy. It could be a crowded year, but I personally have the sentiment that if you're going to do endoscopy in your career, after 3 years of a fellowship, your skills are not fully cemented and you wouldn't want to take a year lapse of any endoscopic procedure. So that's kind of something from my perspective. I was really shocked when I heard that, but that's a thing. At least it was last time I heard. So understanding the makeup and layout of the program, I think, is really important. When I say like what's unique to your institution, at our institution, we're really a med-surg collaborative effort. We have an IBD center where medicine and the surgical aspect all live under one roof, along with other services such as nutrition and psychological services. And I wanted our program in training to mirror what our center offers. So we do offer a small subset of time dedicated to understanding the surgical management of IBD because it's a treatment too. So I think it's understanding all the different facets of care, as well as some sense of what you want to go into in the future when you're doing your exploration.
Wow, that's very helpful. It seems like there isn't really a clear way for applicants to even find out necessarily what the programs offer. So are these just questions that you think that applicants should be asking either leading up to the interview process or during the interviews? Or is there some hidden website where we can find out more information?
So that's another really good question. I will say that while I think most steps towards this point in training definitely take the applicant into account, you know, things are match-based, but, you know, it pays attention to the applicant. I think this process is one where some unification of how we approach the process would be ideal. It was something that I had discussed with colleagues prior to the COVID pandemic, and we haven't gotten back to it, I guess is what I would say. But some universal approach on a lot of different aspects of the training would be beneficial just because it is a little wild, wild west out there. I think, you know, what I tend to find is that by the time you're doing PGY 8 or, you know, 7, 8, you know, year, depending on how many years you took of training, chief year, things of that nature, people oftentimes have some restrictions and they're not just like, I can go anywhere I want. That's not the norm. Like people need to be somewhere geographically or, you know, they have some stipulations. So I think that oftentimes, I mean, I know for our own program, that's definitely come up very significantly. Like people will come and interview and be like, I love your program, but moving my family to New York is just out of the question, for instance, things like that. So I think a lot of that comes into the discussion. In terms of kind of unifying information, there are two kind of places where people can get information about the fellowships, but I agree with you, it's not comprehensive, at least at this moment. So one is the ACG. If you go to the training pathway on their website, there's like a drop-down program finder option where you can choose IBD from the list of types of programs, and you can search. I haven't looked at it recently, but you can search like pretty specifically, like by state or whatever. But it brings up the list of all the programs, and it's just a really nice place to start your look. And this is published once a year as well in one of the red journals. Like when you get like a really fat red journal, it's because it has the fellowship directory in the back of it. So that's one resource. Another resource that is much newer, only I believe in its second year, is that through the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. And they started a program called IBD Start. It has a few different facets to it. One of them is that they are trying to give kind of their seal of approval on programs that kind of meet certain thresholds in terms of what they offer. So are they comprehensive enough to be IBD Start certified? And so there's a very intense application that needed to be filled out by programs. NYU Grossman School of Medicine's program is IBD Start certified. And I know this because I did the very lengthy application last year and had to refresh it for this year. So they gather all of this information and they put together like an online booklet. And if you Google Crohn's and Colitis Foundation IBD Start, I think you will pull this immediately. And when you open, you can basically flip through this electronic book and it gives you just a little bit of information. I mean, it's by no means comprehensive. Like the things I'm talking about are not going to all be fully covered there, but it gives you the point people to talk to, like who's the program director, who's the coordinator, if there's any specific details about timeline, it's on there. And I think it gives a loose sense. So that's at least a place to like start to organize yourself. But then I think questions to the program director are fair. I oftentimes find that people are sometimes just really interested in getting the year under their belt and making the connect, like making the kind of career shift into the IBD space, that I actually sometimes find that I don't get that many questions from candidates about the specific, which is interesting to me because there is so much variance in the programs. But I think it's totally fair game to think about what you want and understand where you're going to go. New York's a pretty crowded space. I believe that there are 4 other IBD fellowships in New York City right now, but they are definitely different from one another.
Wonderful. That's a great resource. Thank you so much. Regarding the application process and timeline, I know you mentioned that briefly. I actually did find the IBD Start pamphlet that you were talking about through the Crohn's and Colitis, and most of the programs list their process as rolling. What does the application timeline typically look like, or could you at least talk to NYU's timeline?
I'll be honest, it's a little bit vague. And I say this because since it is, there is no map, most programs, when they find a good candidate, they may just offer the slot and it will be an exploding offer where like you met the team and they may call you up 2 days later and say like, hey, we loved meeting you. We'd love to offer you our spot. You know, going to start in roughly 2 years or a year and a half. And, you know, please let us know by next Tuesday. That is how this works, which can be a challenge. And the biggest problem is like, when does the whole process start? So I would say, you know, a few years ago, it was kind of well coordinated where people did their interviews at DDW at the end of their second year of fellowship. And then they would find out in the summer and then they would start a year later. And that's pretty much how it happened. A few years ago, I can't tell you how many years ago, I'm going to go on roughly 5 years ago. An institution in the tri-state area offered their slot to somebody, to one of our prospective candidates in April before DDW. And we got really spooked because we were like, whoa. We have not even started really processing our applications and DDW isn't here. And, you know, it worked out. We matched somebody else. But ever since that moment, it's kind of gone just rogue from that process on. And what I will say is we went to like accepting somebody as early as December after that. So December of the fellow's second year. And then we've had a shift where we've offered as early as like right after Labor Day. And so when I get people asking me now, like, I'm interested in your program, when should I submit? And I say, you know, to be fairly considerate, if you could get me your materials by Labor Day, I don't think our institution will make an official decision before that moment in time. But I think it's important to check in with everywhere. I definitely get a series of very late emails usually. There's like kind of 2 waves. There'll be one from GI fellows who just are emailing too late and we've already selected somebody. The other is I'll get asked from people who didn't match in GI. So this will be like December, January, depending on when the GI fellows matches, whether or not we'll take somebody for an IBD fellowship that is not GI fellowship trained yet, which we do not take at our institution. Most established programs do not take a non-GI trained person. So I think that's just something for consideration. But definitely the earlier, the better. And I usually coach my own fellows. So if they express interest in GI and IBD early on, at the beginning of first year, I tell them to like, just be a first year, learn and explore, and let's talk in like April again. And if you still feel like you really are interested in IBD, you've seen all this other stuff and you really are serious about it, then we talk in April and you kind of have, you know, I say like April to July to start getting your application together, make sure your CV is up to date, get your personal statement going, seek your letters of recommendation. I usually tell people to give at least 4 to 6 weeks for a letter of recommendation, but the summer can be kind of hectic if people are away. So giving 2 months is never a bad thing, but you know, make sure you're kind of ready to go. And it's always nice to give a letter writer your CV and your personal statement so they can reference that as they're putting your letter together so that you can definitely get stuff in by Labor Day. I think we're on the earlier side in terms of that. But if you told me that other institutions said they wanted it like by July 1st, I wouldn't be shocked. So I think it just behooves you to like send a quick email, always be really, really nice to the coordinator, always like look up the programs and make sure you're emailing the right people. We've gotten all kinds of like erroneous emails, and I will say if they land in my coordinator's inbox, sometimes they don't even make it to me because she's like, right out of the gate. So just, you know, send those emails soon and look at program sites, look at IBD Start to make sure you know kind of what's needed and get your materials in early.
Great. I'm glad we're doing this episode now. This is very perfectly timed for any second year fellow like myself. From a program director's perspective, what makes an applicant stand out and how do you go about selecting your fellow?
We are really interested in somebody who is going to take some ownership over their learning. This is a luxury year from our perspective. Like the fellow chooses to do this extra year. They want this extra degree of education. We are there to shepherd them through it. Our program is grown so much since we initiated it. We really had like 3.5 faculty. Now we have, I don't even know how many faculty to like provide additional perspectives. And there's definitely an art to treating IBD, not just the science. And so I think our fellows have such opportunity, but they have to be somewhat self-directed. So our fellows get a schedule. It's very organized and there is a lot of structure to it, but you kind of get out as much of the program as you put into it. So I really look for somebody who's like ready to like take ownership of their own learning and like use the year as effectively as possible. I like hearing kind of some sense of what fellows want to do on the other side. If they really want to pursue something in an academic realm, it's helpful to get a sense of like, you know, what they're interested in before they really get their foot in the door. That, you know, on that and that like fourth year of training of GI, like it's helpful to have a sense of what they want to study, because sometimes I've had people come through that are really interested in more like in-depth basic translational research than I think we can offer them the opportunity for. So I want to make sure that they're going to be a good fit for us. Our program, depending on how you approach it, is 30 to 40% research time. Some programs are more than that. Some programs are less than that, but you want to know that somebody's going to use that time well. We, for the first time this year, are able to offer complete IUS training as part of our fellowship, which is new and a huge, huge opportunity, because getting access to IUS training is, it's a bit of a, you know, moving target. I definitely don't know the latest, and I have my local expert, Dr. Dolinger, who is working on the whole training pathway and a fantastic asset to our fellowship as a result. But we offer that, and so understanding if people are going to want to take advantage of that. My expectation at the end of first year, beginning of second year, is you're not going to have it all mapped out, and I don't expect people to, but I just want to really understand why somebody feels that they need this extra year and provide some confidence that they're going to really take advantage of the opportunity to spend the year learning.
For fellows whose home institution offers an advanced IBD fellowship, what factors should they consider when deciding whether to stay at their home program versus moving to a different institution for the fourth year?
That's a great question and one that I get asked often. I will say, again, just the like life piece of it has a huge impact. Everyone's been out of school for a really long time, and sometimes the decisions have to be made based on what's practical for people's lives. But I will say that, like, again, you know, in New York City, there's a lot of programs to choose from. I think it's kind of understanding what they think the value add will be from staying at their home institution versus the value add of leaving to go somewhere. If somebody like knows that they need to move somewhere else, it might be ideal to go do a fellowship somewhere else, because then they can learn what the practice is like in that community, and potentially it leads to a job, right? So again, those like life factors are always a huge part of the conversation, but I think it's understanding what they want to do. We have had some of our fellows stay with us. We've also had some of our fellows leave to go elsewhere. I think it, you know, since the programs are so different, thinking about what the program is going to offer you and what you're looking for on the other side will really help guide a decision. Sometimes I've had fellows who have just complete flexibility to go wherever, and they've opted to go to a different program just to try something new because they can go do it, which is fantastic if you have that opportunity. So there are so many great programs out there, but I think it's just what's going to be the right fit holistically for the fellow at that point in their career and their life.
For fellows, on the other hand, who are at programs without a large IBD division, do you have any advice for how they might be able to strengthen their application and gain exposure to the field?
So there's so many opportunities these days. I have to say, when I was a trainee, there was so much less opportunity to engage. And I think it's fabulous that you can go to conferences, you can meet faculty. There's so many different programs. As you know, at IBD 101, we go through kind of a timeline of all the different opportunities that are out there, when to apply for them, et cetera. So I think it's kind of trying to engage yourself in that greater IBD community beyond what your own institution has. There's so many programs through the ACG, like for instance, the ACG mentoring program, which I've served as a mentor for a number of years, and fellows can request a particular faculty member. And I think, you know, there are, last time I checked, a handful of IBD faculty that serve in this role. So that's one opportunity, is just to get a one-on-one mentoring opportunity through the ACG. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation offers some other similar opportunities through their REACH program, which is their, I forget what the exact acronym stands for, but it's for like people in their training up to 7 years out. And that did not exist when I was a fellow. So not only does it get you a reduced fee membership to the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, but you get a lot of early career programming opportunities and networking opportunities. So it's about just engaging. I think in general, society engagement is really helpful if you don't have something at your own institution. There are a couple of IBD specific journal editorial positions, both through the IBD journal and through the Crohn's and Colitis 360 journal. I launched and was overseeing the CC 360 program until recently. And so that's a way to get like IBD mentorship. I was meeting with an IBD fellow from another institution with another faculty member once a month, and we were reviewing articles, but she kind of became our mentee as well because we were talking, you know, kind of broader than the articles themselves. So just kind of looking and exploring, showing up at meetings. The AIBD meeting has a fellows program tacked onto it the day before the program occurs. I believe Congress has some REACH in-person networking sessions at that meeting. So just showing up at the meetings, getting involved in societies, and connecting yourself to IBD faculty.
Awesome. All right. Looking forward a bit. This one's a three-part question. So what are some of the different career paths available after IBD fellowship? Do most fellows who pursue the additional year ultimately go into academic and research-focused careers, or is there more variability than applicants may realize? And then on that note, for fellows considering academic versus private practice careers, how can an IBD fellowship fit into each path? And basically, do you recommend the year only for people who are 100% pursuing academic research careers, or do you tend to recommend it to everyone?
All right, I'm going to take the last one first because I think that's an easy one. I do recommend it to everyone if they think they need the training. Like I said, if you're at an institution with a center and you have the opportunity to spend a lot of time dedicated to IBD, you don't necessarily need to do the year. But that has to be specific, intentional, and is not the most common situation. So I think it's important to just be aware most people are going to need it. In terms of whether the fellowship can benefit you in either, I think it's kind of like an unspoken rule that if you're going to go to want to work in an academic center, you kind of have to have done a fellowship these days. Like, I just don't see it otherwise. I do know some people who haven't done them, but then stayed at their own institution. That can work. But if you want to go elsewhere, you pretty much need the fellowship now. But if you want to go to a more private environment, do you need the fellowship? You know, I don't know that you need it because they need to see it on your CV that you did it. But in order to get enough IBD exposure at most general fellowships, you're going to need it. If you want to be the go-to person for taking care of IBD, whether it's a small practice or a large practice, the practice is going to be very happy to have you because IBD, you know, you're not doing as many procedures, relatively speaking, and there's a lot more cognitive medicine and from a billing perspective in GI, that looks very different. And so people in practices are really happy to offload their IBD if they're not comfortable or don't have the time to manage it. But then that's going to be a tremendous burden on a junior member of a practice if they don't have the IBD training. And there are a couple of people out in more community-based practices that do have the IBD training. And I know that they're very sought after just because they brought like a different level of understanding and knowledge to the practice. The other piece is that while the notion of like private practice, I don't even know what that is anymore, is like changing and evolving, there are some non-academic practices that have significant clinical trials programs. And I think that if you do a IBD fellowship, you have potentially the opportunity to get a lot more exposure to clinical trials, especially if you go there with that intentionality to learn about running trials and how that works. And that can be significantly lucrative from a financial perspective to the practice. And so doing that additional year of training to gain that knowledge to bring to a practice is still extremely valuable. So I know that's a lot of information, but I think the answer is yes, if you can. Doesn't matter where you're going. If you want to do IBD and you're not going to get enough in your 3 years at your home institution, it will be valuable no matter what. In terms of different career paths afterwards, I think we've probably covered a lot of that, but I think, you know, it could be any type of research. It could be clinician educator at an academic center. And then, of course, it could be in a non-academic environment as well. All of those are possibilities. And I do think, you know, I think that there is a very significant correlation to where people train in terms of what type of environment they end up going into. And you should be trying to match the fellowship to where you want to end up ultimately.
And then lastly, just any final advice for fellows preparing to apply to the IBD fellowship?
I think I would just recommend doing your research early, getting letters from strong writers, knowing that they're going to shine the best light on you. If there are people in your fellowship that know you very well, that's obviously hugely beneficial. Depending on how big your program is, after a first year fellowship, that can be sometimes hard to identify if you've worked with tons of people. But if you have people, faculty who have done an IBD fellowship elsewhere, write you a letter, that could be beneficial. Just, you know, the network is small and people, since it's a program of one or two fellows, typically we want to know that we're getting somebody that's going to be good and reliable and strongly trained clinically to be able to have a foundation to just build upon during that last year. We don't want somebody who has knowledge gaps after completing the 3 years of GI fellowship. So I think just, yeah, doing your homework and having the best light shine on your application so that when program directors are reading it, you know, they're excited to bring you in for the interview process to learn more.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Mulder. I know I learned so much from this conversation, and I know all of the trainees listening today will also be so grateful to you and thankful to have you share your experience. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. Good luck to all the applicants.